Well, hello. Welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the patient voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Patient?
Well, for a host of factors, mate, we've had to hold fire, haven't we, on the Goalkeepers Union for a few weeks, slash food poisoning, slash norovirus, slash a multitude of reasons, but we are back.
Which have all affected you, it must be said. None of these affected me.
Hence why you're patient.
Very patient. Yeah. This is true.
I'm being kind of complimentary in a way.
But you're fully fit now.
I'm getting there. Yeah, there or thereabouts. I'd say
You've had some strange side effect to all of these illnesses and things you've gone through. So you come back with some tash of sorts. It's very interesting.
True story. And we're not going to dwell on it because it's completely irrelevant. But yes, I was shaving the other day prior to coming into recording for Love Sport, and the battery stopped. So I had a choice to make as to whether I... Because basically, it wasn't like it is now. I had sort of a weird half handlebar and also the tiniest little spiky goatee. So I quickly charged it for another 2 minutes. I was rushing for a train, tidied it up as much as I could, but left the moustache. And then the next day, I thought, you know what? I'm sticking with this.
I'm going to stick with it. Nice. Well, what an interesting story to kick off the show.
Good to be back.
Indeed.
People instantly pressing stop, unsubscribe, see you later. But no, this is the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Good to be back. Plenty coming up over the course of the next few months. More of this, of course, a weekly podcast in addition to our interview features. First up this week, Adam Davies, we are going to be featuring. So make sure you look out for that one. But we're starting, Richard, with something quite extraordinary, something quite rare here on the podcast, and that is the fact that the Goalkeepers Union is divided, my friend.
Yes, they are.
David De Gea against Liverpool goes up for a challenge with Virgil van Dijk. It was given, it wasn't given. I'm going to come to you in a minute, but we put this out on Twitter and had an overwhelming response. And when I say divided, it's pretty incredible. I'm just going to read out a few of the messages that we've got now. First one from Kingsley. If a player hits your arm after you've caught the ball, you will drop it. Same if someone hits your foot before you kick it. You won't kick it the way you want. The stronger argument is total rubbish. You're in midair, getting clattered. You're only going with the striker. Mm-hmm. Andrew Allen said, I'm deeply, deeply troubled that I agree with Gary Neville on a goalkeeper point. De Gea should have driven up and forward with his knee up across to protect himself. We'd all demand a foul, but no, it wasn't one. Jim Kavanagh, he said Van Dijk is competing legally for the ball. Goalkeepers are given too much protection as it is. This wouldn't be a foul anywhere else on the pitch against an outfield player, so why should it be against the goalkeeper? De Gea is just soft. If he comes and takes the ball forcefully, then no problem. Dean says, without the challenge, so how does he go for the ball without challenging for it? Arms by his side, jumping for the ball with his eyes on it. Please, someone tell me what he could have done differently. De Gea's fumble makes the challenge look worse. Danielle said, I think he should be stronger in that situation, a lot stronger. It's not the first time it's happened to him. If it was outfield, it would never have been given. But because us goalkeepers get special treatment 90% of the time, he gets the decision. And then Richard Lee said, not you, mate, another Richard Lee. Who'd have thought it?
I mean, it's one of the most common names.
And this one speaks a lot of sense, to be fair.
Go on.
He says, players are allowed to challenge goalkeepers, just not foul them. All he's done is use his body to try and win the ball the same way he does against an attacker when defending. At this rate, might as well say, touch the keeper, it's a foul. That's a clear rule then. And lastly, by the way, this isn't to do specifically with the incident, but James Elsie says, the ref thought it was a foul. He clearly moves his whistle to his mouth, plays a terrible advantage, and VAR rescues him. Not many people flag that up, to be fair.
Interesting point. Well, look, firstly, VAR overturned this decision quicker than any other decision we've seen overturned, I think it's fair to say, in the Premier League this season. It was literally went to VAR. Within seconds, they decided it was a foul, which I think partly was because the referee knew it was a foul. Also, from what we believe, the presenter, David Jones, made the point that Stockley Park actually gave the referee a little bit of stick for the fact he didn't make the decision on the field. Now, look, do you know what? There's some really interesting points there. Now, what I'm going to say is, according to the rules, this is a foul. Now, that's not to say it's good goalkeeping, because it isn't. And I think David De Gea, if he watches it again, he's not going to be proud of the way in which he approached it, because you're right, technically it wasn't great, didn't have his knee up, didn't really protect himself. The argument that Van Dijk was just going up for a regular challenge isn't an argument, because if you're going for a regular challenge and you happen to catch someone late, it's a foul. So that's not an argument you can use. The key argument for me is that if you watch it in slow motion, he does hit his arm and therefore he drops the ball. If Van Dijk isn't there, he catches the ball. Therefore, it's a foul. Now, is he weak? yeah, I think it's something that David De Gea has struggled a bit with. The goal against Everton, which was, this wasn't as bad as the one against Everton, which was given. I heard a really interesting point, actually, that the goal against Everton that was given went back to Stockley Park. It was the same referee who was in Stockley Park that gave the goal against Everton. So just, but then also that, it makes the point that actually as a referee, he may well have decided that he's on the line of, let goalkeepers need to be a bit stronger. And therefore he's given the decision when he was at Stockley Park. He gave the decision, obviously, in this game. It was then overturned at Stockley Park. So to go back to the start, it is a foul. I don't think it's particularly good goalkeeping because I don't think he has protected himself. He's not the strongest when he comes up to catch the cross, and it has led to all these conversations. But ultimately, according to the rules as they are, unless they change the rules and then goalkeepers are given a bit less protection, this will always be a foul if it goes to VAR. Now, if you're playing in the lower leagues, the bad news is that you won't get this. I didn't get it. I played against Barnsley away. I'll always remember it because I was challenged a lot worse than Van Dijk challenged De Gea, and they gave the goal and I got dropped the next game. And I remember it because it was quite a big deal at the time and I felt really hard done by it. And I've got no doubt that had it gone to VAR, I would have got the decision. So you goalkeepers listening in that are playing Championship and lower, you're not getting this decision. The chances are, I'd say 8 times out of 10, this is given as a goal.
Well, the fact that the goalkeepers union is divided, I think, is quite interesting because that's rare. It's not common that we have goalkeepers disagreeing on a matter so fiercely as they have done. And you heard from quite a few goalkeepers too, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Do you know what? And like, by the way, my comments, I'm very aware that as much as, and I'm trying to make it clear, almost I'm trying to take emotion out of it, which is, you know, when I watched it, it frustrated me because I didn't agree with Gary Neville's comments for a change. I didn't agree with the comments. I actually agree with Patrice Evra, and I put it in my tweet that I put out because Patrice Evra was just very matter of fact. It's a foul. It is a foul. According to the rules, it's a foul. Now, yeah, you can look at it that, oh, if that happens anywhere else on the field and two players challenge, that's fine. But look at the rule book. And I know someone did actually point this out, and we'll see if we can find it. We'll put it out on Twitter. But according to the rules as they are, if you jump, you challenge a goalkeeper and you move their arm, then they're not going to catch the ball. Therefore, it's a foul. So it's irrelevant whether you think it was soft, whether you think it was bad goalkeeping. It's all a complete irrelevance. There's a reason that VAR overturned it as quickly as it did. It is because it is a foul. Now, the argument more so is then, do the rules need to change? That's the argument. Because,
well, one of the rules that states a goalkeeper cannot be challenged by an opponent when in control of the ball with the hands.
Which he would have been in control of the ball with the hands.
Was he in control, though?
Well, no, but he wasn't because he was touched. That's the point. It was that you can't deny that. That's the bit that nobody can deny. There is a picture of Van Dijk not getting to the ball, and he had, unfortunately, he did touch his arm, and it moved his arm out of the way, and therefore he dropped the ball. Does he catch the ball if Van Dijk's not there?
Yeah, of course he does.
Of course he does. So it's a foul. That is, according to the rules at the moment, that is what it is. Now, that's not to say it's enforced everywhere, and that's what I'm saying. If you're playing in the lower leagues, this is probably going to work against you. But while VAR is in play, this is going to benefit a goalkeeper. So, look, I was slightly disappointed that the goalkeepers' union was as split as it was, because I think that we have so many things that go against us. Actually, something like this, where really it should go for us, and it has gone for us. Look, do you know what? I do agree that he'll look back, and it's something that David De Gea, since he's come to England, it's never been a strength of his. He's got away with it, I'd say, to an extent, and he's quite clever. He's not poor at crosses anymore, but certainly it's not one where you'd be like, yeah, if you had a keeper to come and catch a cross, I wouldn't choose David De Gea, certainly. And he's got a technique where he's quite dainty, I would say, almost. Like the one against Everton, where it's like a thing of art, where he comes out and it will be like a little punch, like a little rabbit punch he does, rather than maybe, you remember, like Peter Schmeichel back in the day, who would come out and take everything with him. For those Watford fans listening, Kevin Miller, I remember watching him come for crosses. He's like a steam train coming through people and just taking everybody out in their way. That's not David De Gea. He will like maneuver his way through people, come and take the perfect catch, which in this instance, it wasn't the right technique to use. This is where you need that nasty, ugly goalkeeper just to have a big knee up. And I'll tell you what, Van Dijk won't come in again if you're going with your knee up on that, because Van Dijk would probably have a black eye right now.
Interesting. By the way, you mentioned rabbits there. We're going to talk about rabbits later on. So yeah, nice little segue that, well, elongated segue that we'll get onto later on. Just quickly to finish on the incident itself.
Yeah.
Punching. Should he have just chosen to punch to eliminate the risk altogether, knowing that a player like Virgil van Dijk,
it's not one to punch because of the trajectory of the ball. And this is where you got like the certain rules of thumb, depending on the ball coming. If it's, give an example, it's a whip corner that's coming head height, 4 or 5 yards out, and you know you've got bodies between you and the ball, then that's one where you're attacking the ball and you're getting a big punch back towards the taker. That's a good example of rule of thumb. Don't even take the risk of trying to catch it, because people will be coming in and clattering you. When it's a looped ball to the far post, no way you punch it, because for a start, you're going to get very little power on the punch. You haven't got enough to work with. So where do you punch it? If anything, you might parry it out for a corner or for a throw, but I don't think that's a particularly good technique. I think that providing you get your timing right, and he could have been, he didn't quite catch it at the highest point. That was the other thing. It's almost like a basketball player. Now, picture this. The ball shot, a basketball player that gets a rebound. What does he do? He gets his position, he sets, then he goes up really powerfully with 2 feet and catches it as high as he can. Ben Foster does the technique brilliantly, where he gets his position, big wide stance, explodes up into the air and catches it really high. What David De Gea does, he kind of backpedals and almost tried to catch it in front of him still, which is where the issue is as well, because he then didn't. If he had actually took his position to catch it at the highest point, he would have almost body checked Van Dijk before he got there, and then he would have caught it at a higher point. It would have been a much easier technique to execute. For me, it just seems like a technique that he hasn't necessarily practiced. He's still trying to do a technique that you'd come and catch a ball 8 yards out in front of you, as opposed to one that's put up on the back stick. It wasn't quite the right technique for me.
Okay, the reaction aside from that was a disgrace.
I mean, look, I've been there where, do you know, it's the biggest frustration when you know you've been wronged. The ball's in the net, you know you're 1-0 down, you know it could cost you your place, it did in my point, in my case, and that then leads to other things. So in that moment, you see red and you're furious because you know they've made a mistake, and they did make a mistake. So look, in that moment, we've all been there where we see red and we're absolutely furious and we want to get our point across. So I'm not too upset. I'm not too disappointed about that. I think when you're in that state, yeah, to have emotional intelligence and to try and say it calmly is very difficult. I think in that moment, they go 2-0 down. Obviously, they end up losing the game. But they go 2-0 down in that moment. They could have lost 4 or 5. So it was a key moment in the game that in the end went their way and it allowed it to be a good game of football. That ball goes in. I think De Gea gets a lot of stick, of course, in the papers the next day. They end up losing 4 or 5 and it's a completely different conversation.
Got stick anyway, to be fair, no, didn't he?
He did, but do you know what? I look at it, okay, take that incident out of it. Even that incident, it's a foul. So he then makes 2 brilliant saves after that. And he actually played a reasonably good game. Yet I see in the papers he's getting 5s and 6s. It's insane.
Good to see Alisson front and centre of these celebrations, we have to say, and good to see a goalkeeper get an assist. However, can we please all just calm down, for crying out loud? Now, I've had a few arguments about this over the course of the past few days, because we are here to celebrate goalkeepers. We're here to explain why goalkeepers make errors, explain why certain brilliance from goalkeepers doesn't get noticed. Now, the assist he gave to Mo Salah, good, yeah? A decent punt. Up the pitch. A ping, not a punt, a ping. But if you compare that to, say, when Liverpool played Arsenal last season and it was a calculated ping that was through a couple of players and set Liverpool on their way to score a goal, it is nothing like that. No. I would expect it when people turn around to me and said, oh, I'd like to see you try better. Well, no. I'm not an international goalkeeper. I don't get thousands of pounds a week to do stuff like that. He should be able to do that, for me, at the drop of a hat. Mo Salah was completely on his own. So, yes, listen, it was a good goal kick out, but I would have expected him to have done it.
I actually agree with you on this one for a change. It makes a nice change,
wow.
Doesn't it? No, I do, because he actually didn't nail it either, it's fair to say. But it was because United had committed everybody forward, literally everybody, and he was in 30 yards of space. And if anything, had he nailed it, Mo Salah would have had more time on the one-on-one. Thankfully, it was good enough. Look, it was a nice enough strike. You're right. It was. It's one that he'll do pretty much every time in the game, and it was, for him, a 7 out of 10 strike. It just so happened that United had committed everyone forward, and of course, Salah was one-on-one, and he put it away. I did love the fact that, by the way, I must say, he was brilliant again, Alisson. Like, there's a moment, he caught one in the second half down to his right, a shot from maybe 20-odd yards, real fiercely struck shot, and the way he just caught it, absolutely no issue. A lot of goalkeepers parry that, but he just looked so calm and confident in his handling. His decision-making all day was fantastic. The more I watch him, when it comes to the big games, Alisson turns up every single time, and I love the fact that he celebrated first with Mo Salah. You actually consider, he's had to run the entire length. It was the fact that Liverpool players allowed him to get there first as well, because there would have been a lot of players closer to Mo Salah than Alisson, but they almost made a point of, go on, this is your moment. And for him to go and do a knee slide, how many times does the goalkeeper get to do a knee slide? No, it's fantastic.
You know how I feel about knee slides. It's not something that any footballer should do in fear of serious injury. Right. However, we'll move on. What a start to our return.
Indeed.
To Between the Sticks, Richard. Of course, if you agree or disagree with anything that we've just said, easy to get in touch with us. hello@goalkeepersunion.net, on Twitter @GKUnion. Okay, for the umpteenth time on this podcast, Troy Deeney is going to get a mention. He got a penalty, Richard, against Spurs in Watford's 0-0 draw, and it was 0-0 because Paolo Gazzaniga saved it. Clearly, he's been listening to the podcast and thought, I remember what Matt Beadle said, and I'm going to dive to my right.
Sure. Or we could look at it the fact that Neil Cutler, the Aston Villa goalkeeper coach, sent through the stats as to where Troy Deeney tends to go, which is to the right.
Yeah.
So he's done exactly what... So Tom Heaton, who dived, and we, well, you, gave him some stick, which Neil Cutler rightly pulled you up on and made you look a little bit silly. So we go back to that, and actually he made the point, they did the research, that ordinarily Troy Deeney goes to the goalkeeper's right, so therefore Tom Heaton went to his right, and then you lambasted Tom Heaton because you said he should have stayed down the middle. But of course Neil Cutler proved he tends to go to, which is exactly what he did here. So I would argue that actually Troy Deeney should have listened to the podcast, because then maybe he would have changed his decision. Gazzaniga must listen. So look, if you're listening, Gazzaniga, we do appreciate you listening. You're one of the many thousands that listen, and please do email us.
Yep, and kind of does just sort of prove my point. It just enhances my point, to be fair. So Neil Cutler, I'm sure, is listening too, in the sense that I've always said from the outset that when Troy Deeney is fully match fit and he's banged a couple of penalties in, he'll probably start mixing it up, which is exactly what he did on this occasion. Paolo Gazzaniga thought, yes, he will go down to my right rather than smash it down the middle, because he doesn't need to do that now because he can place it as is. Not a very good penalty, but well saved by Gazzaniga.
I mean, it's a fantastic story that you tell, Matt. Really, really good story.
I'm just glad we cleared it up.
Yeah, no. When you say about mixing it up, he effectively went the way he always goes, so he didn't mix it up at all. But it's fine. I mean, look, if you can take some solace from this, then by all means.
Good stuff. Okay, we're going to move on now to Nick Pope, who bounced back against Leicester City. Great penalty save from Jamie Vardy. Two saves from Vardy in the game. A brilliant one from Dennis Pratt as well early in the second half. And the good thing about this was that he was able to bounce back from an error that we didn't get a chance to talk about last week, but an error that we almost can't explain against Chelsea.
No, we can't. And the only thing I can think, for those that haven't seen it, ball crossed in, Tammy Abraham heads it down into the ground, and it's just a lack of coordination. It's very strange. Like, he kind of goes down to his left and his hands just miss the ball and it goes in. It's very strange. Technically, you can pick the bones out of it technically. The only thing I can think, and I've had this before, is that you just lose sight of the ball. And part of the reason will be that you imagine you're in a stadium, you've got the background, you've got the stand, you've got floodlights and everything else that's going on. Just for a split second, as it's headed down into the ground, you just lost your bearings a bit. Because he did have to move back. He had to set on the line and he's just lost his bearings a bit and never quite got himself in the position to get himself down to the left and make the save. And it is just a lack of coordination and lack
as
of
well,
bearings,
because there was a player on the line as well.
It could
there?
Be yeah, there's someone like right next to him. So there'll be a few things going on. I think it's just a lack of concentration in the key moment, and in the end obviously it doesn't look good. It certainly doesn't look good. It's a very, very strange one. It's not an error that you see that often. However, talk about bouncing back. Yeah, fantastic. Really, really, you know, and it's a huge result for them as well. Massive result, winning in the last minute, of course. And from his point of view, what I would say is this shows character. You know, we talk about goalkeepers, and the biggest thing for me is the ability to bounce back from mistakes, because we're all going to make them. You know, I know you guys listening in, I'm sure you're making mistakes left, right and centre. To be able to bounce back the next game and play as if nothing's happened, those are the goalkeepers that go to the very top. So to see him do this, the game after that, I was buzzing for him.
We've had him on the podcast, haven't we? And he's very matter of fact, actually very different to a lot of the goalkeepers that we've interviewed before.
So there's no right or wrong. And it was so interesting, because we went from Tom Heaton to Nick Pope the next week. And you have Tom Heaton, who is bang on when it comes to the psychology and very structured in his mindset as to how he gets himself ready for a game. You've then got Nick Pope, who's happy-go-lucky. And do you know what? There is no right or wrong, because Tom Heaton, it might be that he goes away and he processes his thoughts and he understands the mistake and he then gets himself in the right frame of mind to play the next game. I would say Nick sort of is more on that side of things, where he seems laid back, but interestingly, and what's critical in this, is that he's doing the right things. And it might be that the game finishes and he's forgotten about it. Like, genuinely, Ben Foster was like that to an extent. He could literally finish a game, you know, wipe his gloves and, okay, on to the next. And forget that the last game. Whereas I know where I struggled when I was younger was that I would go into a game and I'd be confident if the game before had been a good game. I'd lack confidence if the game before had been a poor game. So I was still carrying that game with me into the next game that I was playing. So to have the ability, the mental understanding, the mental awareness to be able to get yourself into a great peak state despite whatever's happened, whether you won 5-0 or lost 5-0 the previous game, if you can get yourself into your optimum performance state for every single game, you give yourself the best chance. And I can't help but feel, seeing what Nick Pope did at the weekend, he did exactly that.
What was nice as well that is rare for Pope was to see a bit of emotion.
Yeah.
Don't normally see that from Nick Pope, so it was nice to see a bit of emotion, and when Burnley won too.
Well, it's a massive win for them, wasn't it? And I think that from his point of view, look, he's building another good season. He was phenomenal the season before last. Of course, last season, injury blighted that one. But again, this season, he's building another solid season, really establishing himself as a top Premier League goalkeeper. And I think this, it was, it, look, it was a nice one for him. The fact that it hadn't gone as well for him against Chelsea, to then bounce back in this way, to save a penalty, to win a game. Look, we've all had those games as goalkeepers where we've saved a penalty, we've gone on to win the game. And it's one of the best feelings.
Yeah, massive win for Burnley to get clear of that relegation scrap. A team very much in it is Bournemouth. Steve Cook, what a save, mate. An hour into their game with Norwich City, Andrzej Duda tries a lofted effort on his debut, by the way, and Cook has denied him a goal with a top-hand save.
Top-hand, tips it onto the post, puts it around the post. Do you know what it was, though? It was the fact that he's on the ground and he managed to get the speed at which he got up and the explosive power he used to get his top hand to the wall. Watch the technique again over and over. It's the kind of drill you do in training where it'll be down and then up the other side to make a save. So he is flat on the floor to then explode up and get fingertips on it and put it into the post. Unbelievable save. Of course, it then ended up costing them him for the rest of the game and a goal anyway because of the penalty. So probably something he regrets. But from a technical point of view, if they ever need to put a player in goal, then he's certainly the person you put in goal.
Just touching on a couple of goalkeeper signings in the Premier League. Darren Randall finally got over the line for West Ham. And Fabianski as well. We haven't actually had a chance to speak about this. Now, Fabianski, a goalkeeper that you warned West Ham, to be fair, could have come back too early and might have a recurrence of his injury. That's exactly what happened.
That's exactly what he did. It was, I mean, in hindsight, it was a poor decision. But it was forced upon them to an extent. You know, I believe Roberto's now gone on loan, hasn't he, to Alaves, I think it is. And they've also got Dave Martin still there. And now that Randolph's there. Randolph's very, very good. He's been statistically the top performer in the Championship over the last couple of years. Of course, international as well, and previous at West Ham. It was one that made a lot of sense. There are question marks over his injury record as well in recent times. So hopefully that was just a short-term issue and he's able to kick on now. I think West Ham fans will feel a lot more comfortable knowing that Randolph can step in for Fabianski, but Fabianski is still a key player for them. And it showed, you know, he came back in and obviously they had a very mini upturn, but he has got himself injured again. So they just need to be really careful because he's not that young anymore either. And I think, you know, I certainly had it as I got older. The injuries are harder to shake. And as much as you're desperate to play, if it takes an extra week, extra 2 weeks, in fact, whatever age you are listening in, if it does take an extra week or 2 weeks to be 100%, I'd always recommend doing it. And as much as it's horrible to miss the odd game, the longer term picture, always, it makes more sense to be 100% fit. Also, you'll often do it where you go out there and you're 80% fit and you're not quite right, which kind of happened to Fabianski the first game he played. I think it might have been Leicester maybe, where he wasn't 100%, it's fair to say. And you could see he wasn't that sharp. So I'd always say take the extra week. It's so much nicer to know you're 100% fit and you're 100% match fit.
And Pepe Reina coming back to the Premier League at 37 years old. He played just once this season for Milan against Genoa. Conceded a penalty, saved a penalty. Yeah. Looked pretty good, I suppose. Listen, this is Pepe Reina. You know what you're going to get.
Yeah. No, look, I think it's an interesting one. They'd be devastated that Tom Heaton went down because I think that given what Tom Heaton did last season for Burnley in a very similar situation, he could have been key for Aston Villa this season. So they'd be devastated that he went down. However, if you're going to bring someone in, to bring someone tried and tested that's done it at the top level like he has, I think for his experience as much as anything, now we'll soon see whether he's at the level that he was before, but I think to have somebody who is a winner, like he is, with his experience, he's always been a fantastic goalkeeper. Even if he's 90% of the goalkeeper we saw before, then this will end up being a brilliant signing. And it does give Villa a great chance, a fighting chance of staying in the league.
The Championship now, and Simon Sluger, another character who has gained a bit of attention on this podcast. Luton lost 3-1 at the City Ground over the weekend to Nottingham Forest. They were 1-0 up. Pretty comfortable in the game, you'd have to say. And then Sluger lets one slip through his fingers from Joe Lolley. By the way, there were a number of factors leading up to the goal that we could go into. There was a foul on Loire Loire, potentially from Ben Watson. If you give Joe Lolley that amount of time on his left foot, he's going to punish you, as was seen with the second goal in particular. Mm-hmm. But the first one,
He has to do better, of course. And you could see his frustration straight away. He knew straight away that he could have done a lot better with that shot. Now, it's that classic one, and we've seen it over and over, where you're set, and it's not quite where you're at a full dive, and it's probably a little bit too far out for your feet. It's that kind of little corridor where you need that solid, being able to drop, like Saka Spuds drop, and be able to trap it. And you just saw, he is quite a tall man, in fairness to him. He was set reasonably high, never really got himself down in a position to make the save. He decided to go with his hands, and it's just crept through. It's a horrible one for a goalkeeper. I can see exactly why he's done what he's done. But this is one where it's a training point, where I know they've got excellent coaches down there at Luton, so it'll just be a training point where it's just that speed at which you can get down. So be able to just to collapse down and be able to trap the ball, and you hold it more often than not. It's not one that you ever parry because of where it is. It's right in the socket. You get down and you're just able to trap it. And unfortunately, from his point of view, he was maybe ever so slightly too high, wasn't able to drop quick enough, and it is one of those squirmy, horrible ones that just goes through him. So, yeah, not a particularly nice moment for him. He's had a few this season. I know he came with a little bit of pressure on his shoulders as well, but obviously it hasn't quite gone to plan as yet.
This is an interesting case. We've spoken to James Shea on the podcast before. They are now at 16 games apiece, Shea and Sluger. For Sluger, it's 33 goals conceded in that time. For Shea, it's 40. Now, slight caveat in that they lost 7-0 to Brentford when Shea was in goals, so those stats are slightly skewed. But Sluger came back in just before the turn of the year. Shea had concussion, and Graham Jones, I'm going to read out a couple of his quotes that he gave after the 3-3 draw with Fulham. He said, "I don't doubt his ability and his reactions. He's come in and he's been ready. Long may it continue." He talked about the fact that he got caught up a little bit with the transition, but he did say, "That's without settling in. I don't think he got an apartment until the first weekend. It's many, many things." But he does say he's been first class and that he's basically learnt his lessons. What would you do now if you're Graham Jones, with James Shea waiting in the wings and Sluger still making errors a long time into the season since he moved?
It's tricky because this is where then it's not just about performance as well, you could argue. You know, they did make a big investment in him as a goalkeeper, and he obviously does have a lot of talent. So there is an element, there is a transitional period. You move over from a foreign country to the UK, you often see it takes a player 6 months to really find their feet. The difficulty is that it hasn't gone as well as he would have liked so far. And it's horrible for a keeper when you feel that, because you almost feel like you're on the back foot and you're having to win fans over, having to win the manager over. And it can be done, but it will take a bit of time. If I was Luton, look, it's a toss-up as to what you do. You know, you've got James Shea, who, of course, got you promoted last season. Very, very solid performer. I went and watched him earlier in the season. He was excellent. Obviously, I had him on the podcast. He's a very stable character as well. So you know what you're going to get with James Shea. Now, if you see Sluger as the future, then it might be that you back him. However, that might be not necessarily just him, but because of the position they're in, it's very precarious. The chances are they're going to go back down to League One, which is such a shame if that were to happen. So it's a tough position to be in. I think they will stick with him. And I think from his point of view, look, it's one of them where it's easy to give advice from here, but just as best he can, clean slate, go again. Like, you've done some brilliant things in the past. There's a reason that Luton spent the amount of money on you that they did. They've got belief in you. You are good enough. You've got all the tools in the locker, and it's then just a case, and every goalkeeper's been here, get your head down, work harder than you ever worked before, and just keep believing that at some point it will turn, because it will turn at some point. And look, it was an unfortunate moment at the weekend, but it's a small point, it's a small technical point that you can work on, and I'm sure that we'll see far more of him, and I'm sure we'll see the best of him as the season progresses.
Similar scenario at Cardiff City. Now, what in the blazes is going on here? Alex Smithies came back in for the South Wales derby against Swansea. He was in against Birmingham at the weekend. Before we actually talk about the situation with him and Neil Etheridge and Joe Day to an extent as well, what a save from Jude Bellingham that he made in that game. It was a 1-1 draw at St Andrews. Decent save as well from Lukas Djukovic late on in the game. But he's back in. Neil Etheridge is still there. Neil Harris has made some interesting quotes, which I'll now give you, actually. This was after the draw with Swansea. He said, "We've got three very good goalkeepers. Sometimes you can have too many." Okay. "The transfer window is exciting. Lots of rumours, lots of press." Okay. "Ideally, by February the 1st, we would have three senior goalkeepers, so we'll have to see what unfolds." I mean, I don't really know what that means.
No, I kind of agree with him on one front, which, when he said it's too many, it is. They've got two first-team goalkeepers. Now, this is where it's interesting, is that I think when they went to the Premier League and they brought in Smithies, I think that Smithies, or it might have been before that, sorry, but whenever it happened, basically, I think Smithies was bought as a number one. And I think most people knew that Etheridge was going to be a number two. Now, credit to Neil Etheridge. Brilliant. Two seasons. You know, they get promoted to the Premier League. Then in the Premier League, he's one of the best performers in the Premier League, hence the amount of interest he's getting. That then gives them a bit of a problem, because they've still got Alex Smithies, who is a first-choice top-end championship goalkeeper, if not a Premier League goalkeeper, it's fair to say. So it put them in a really interesting situation. How do you keep two keepers happy, where you've got one who's just played a season in the Premier League and potentially might be moving to a West Ham, they were saying, or an Aston Villa, or wherever, you can't have him on the bench. But similarly, you've got Alex Smithies, who has played his whole career as number one in the championship. He doesn't want to be on the bench. So they've got a headache now. Now, I don't think that's going to get sorted in this window. It looked like it might get sorted with the fact that West Ham and Villa are both sorted now for goalkeepers. I don't think that situation gets sorted. And I think we see those two flip-flop a little bit between now and the end of the season.
Which is a good thing or a bad thing?
No, it doesn't help either of them. I mean, it's not Neil Harris's fault because he's come in and he's inherited that. In fairness, it's no one's fault. It's credit to Neil Etheridge for doing what he did initially in order to break in and keep his place in the first team. And you often see that where you've got the number one is then relegated to being a number two, but has absolutely no interest in being a number two. The one who's happy in this situation is Joe Day. Joe Day is comfortable being a number three. Did brilliantly at Newport. Enjoyed watching him play. But with where he's at in his career, that's a really nice role for him. Now, if it is that one moves on, it may even be that Joe Day is then a number two. And again, he'd be a solid number two.
There is also a similar situation at Portsmouth to an extent. Now, Craig McGivray, we've known, has been the undisputed number one at Portsmouth. Alex Bass has since come in. He played at the weekend, only his 14th appearance since the summer of 2016. It was his fourth game in five since the start of the year. Now, he's been handed a new deal till 2023. He's only 21. Mm. What do you make of this one?
The McGivray one's fascinating because of his involvement with the national team and the fact that he's been getting plaudit after plaudit, seemingly, for the last year and a half, couple of years. So I know there is a bit of interest, or I'm led to believe that there might be, and certainly there's been a lot of newspaper articles linking him potentially with Rangers and a few other clubs. So whether it's a case, and we have seen this elsewhere, where they'll take someone out of the firing line while that's going on, almost as a, look, you'll be back in February if you don't move, but for now, let's just take you out of the firing line and see what happens. It might be that. Or it might be something we don't know. It might be something behind the scenes. This is the crazy thing. I think because we build an image and because of international recognition or whatever it might be, we assume that they're flying high and the manager loves them and so on and so forth. It might be that he's just not as rated within the club. It might be that the manager wants a different type of goalkeeper that fits their style of play, which is something that we can't underestimate. You know, we talk about the Liverpools, Man Cities, and the fact that their goalkeepers fit their teams. Lower down, what you tend to find is that's not necessarily the case. Often managers will inherit goalkeepers that don't necessarily fit, or goalkeepers that will come through might be a little bit more suited to how they play. So they'll want to make the switch, even if the number one is a fan's favourite and everyone thinks he's a undisputed number one. It might be, and this often happens, that a manager actually is keen to bring someone else in, but from a PR point of view, that's not easy sometimes. So look, I don't know. My guess is it's the former, that it's more a case of he's got a bit of interest, they've just taken him out of the firing line for now, but we'll only find that out in February. If he hasn't moved in February and he's still not playing, then it could well be the latter.
Bada boom, bada bing, it's only a keeper caper.
Keeper Capers this week goes to the Turkish League 2 third tier. Now, absolute insanity. This is blown up over social media. Uzakspor keeper Ersin Aydin has saved a penalty right at the death. He's then booked for coming off his line, so they've retaken the penalty. He saved it again, and then the referee has given him a second yellow, and he's been sent off. They get to take it a third time, so defender Levan Aktürk goes in goal. What happens?
He makes a save, and it's a brilliant save down to right. There's a few things to this. Firstly, you've got to watch it, because the first two, for me, he's not that far off his line.
It's complete
insanity. Lunacy. So they're two good saves. He gets booked for both and sent off, like ridiculous. And then, like you say, the player goes in goal, and in fairness to him, technically very good. He dives to his left. It's a good dive. It's not like an outfield player's dive either, you know, like, you know what I mean by that, where they'll often land on their stomach or on their back. It's actually a proper dive to his left, makes a good save, and the place goes nuts.
It is a good dive, but it's also very unorthodox.
It is, but it's one of the better ones. Look, you know, I've seen the Vinnie Jones footage over and over, and I enjoy that. For those that haven't seen that, definitely watch that. But you can tell that he's an outfielder in goal, and I just feel that this is a level above Vinnie Jones. Don't get me wrong, it's not to the point of like an actual goalkeeper. You can still see there's a huge difference, but he does get some good power away to his left. It's actually going kind of in the corner. So for him to get there, that's not an easy technique.
Okay, I did say we were going to talk about rabbits. Again, I'm presuming you've not seen this story. Cambridge United were the first team to hand Graham Wesley, in his fourth spell as Stevenage boss, a league victory this season. Now, the quote that's going around is that they were left hopping mad because rabbits managed to get inside the Abbey Stadium, munch through the goal net and leave feces all around the goal mouth.
Oh no.
Unbelievable. What do you do if you're a goalkeeper?
Oh, that's disgusting. I have no idea what I'd do. That's disgusting. Was it actually in the goal mouth itself?
In the goal mouth.
Oh, that's horrendous.
To be fair, it had been cleared because the groundsman Ian Darla had obviously prepared the pitch beforehand, but found that the nets had been munched through and there were rabbit droppings all around the 6-yard box.
That's grim. That is really grim. Well, at least they weren't in the goal mouth itself. That would have been, I don't know if I'd have played.
Have you ever had anything? Because who did we speak to? Tony Parks. Mm. He was stepping in marshmallows in one game. Do you remember?
Yeah,
he had to
yeah,
step
yeah.
in. And we had David Coles said that I think he was lobbed. Hot dog was lobbed at him. It went up his leg. But, I mean, listen, you've been a pro. You were a pro for the majority of your career. For all your career, I should say. Did you ever have anything in a goal mouth that you thought,
nothing, mate. No, do you know what the one I was saying? Like, everyone's had this. And this is where they don't have it at the top level anymore. But it's when you've got a puddle in the goal mouth. Okay, now, it's quite basic. But anybody that's tried to play a game of football and you go to your goal mouth and there's just a big puddle in the middle of your goal mouth, you can't dive. You can't set. You can't make your regular save. So what ends up happening is you play a game trying to avoid your goal, like your 6-yard box. So you find yourself setting like 7-8 yards out when you should be setting 2 yards out. You just end up playing a really fake game of football. In fact, if you've played where you've had a giant puddle in your 6-yard box and you've had to do that, do email in, because I bet you there's several that have experienced that and it's so frustrating.
Sunday League goalkeepers, I would imagine very much so. Okay, Richard, it has been a pleasure being back in your company.
It has indeed. Thank you.
We're going to be back next week, of course, for the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, in association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.